And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 4 minutes past 9 on this Wednesday, the 5th of March 2025, halfway through the working week, the traditional working week, of course. And we have another busy 3 hours for you lined up today. We're going to be talking different sports today, actually. Darts. We're going to be recognising the fact that Congress, the LGFA Congress, is in Donegal. We're going to be speaking to the outgoing chair of Congress and the head of association and, of course, the local chair. That and so much more besides. Loads of space for your comments, your calls, your issues. 086 60 25,000. We have a ton of stuff to catch up on from yesterday. You can give us a call, 210-7491-25,000. And also email comments at highlandradio.com. Our head of sales here, Sean Quinn's, going to be calling in later on today, because we're also going to be launching a very special day as part of Highland Radio's 35th birthday celebration. So looking forward to all of that. It's as usual, there's an awful mix of stuff in a positive way. I say awful's like it sounds bad, but it isn't. Okie doke, let's look at the papers this morning. The Finn Valley Voice. A small rural Gaeltacht school set for the world stage. Last Thursday, three students from Skoltjoga in Clohan, I hope I've pronounced that correctly, participated in and triumphed at the National Vex IQ Robotics final held at Munster Technological University in Cork. Well done, guys. That's nice. The Donegal Post this morning. Quigley set for new heights on Everest mission with Donegal Group. Donegal boxer Jason Quigley is heading for Everest this week with a group from the county to raise money for charity. Jason Quigley, who has climbed the world inside the boxing ring and now is one of 13 from Donegal going to the South Base Camp of Everest. The voyage is all in aid of the Bluestack Special Needs Foundation. Well done, Jason. Great charity, that, of course. The Inish Times, the Inish-owned firm at the centre of the defective concrete crisis, has been ordered to pay costs at the High Court for its prolonged delay in complying with the discovery process. Cassidy Brothers Limited had been directed to turn over all relevant documents to the plaintiffs in the case, or in the class action, sorry, the class action case, by May of last year, but has only agreed to begin to do so 10 months late. It's understood that the discovery order relates to hundreds of thousands of documents stretching back two decades. The Buncrana company has missed umpteen deadlines in the case, which Coleman Legal is taking on behalf of Defective Blocks Ireland, representing approximately 2,000 affected homeowners. A High Court commercial sitting in Dublin in March heard how Cassidy's had been in breach of their obligation over the past 10 months and how the plaintiff's legal representatives have had to go to court on 16 or 17 occasions before ultimately bringing a motion to strike out the defence in January. On to the Irish Times now, and the lead on the front of this paper and all papers, Zelensky ready to seek peace deal under Trump. I said on the show yesterday, towards the end of the show, some of you don't tune in for the last hour or have other things on, that, you know, since Friday till yesterday, you know, things had changed. It seems like everything had changed, and that Donald Trump had fallen out with Zelensky, Donald Trump had fallen out with Europe, and that all of a sudden we needed to be spending, you know, almost a billion on defence, and Ireland was going to be signing a cheque for 100 million, and whether or not Irish troops should be on the ground in Ukraine and all. And I put it to my guest at the time, I says, well, that's could all change very rapidly. You know, where an awful lot's happening off the basis of one meeting in the Oval Office and a couple of tweets, things could dramatically change. And my guest didn't think that would be the case. You just hope that some of these crises of negotiations aren't being used to fast track, you know, bigger issues and bigger intentions, if that makes sense. Because peace has broken out between Zelensky and Trump. Zelensky's apologised. He says Donald Trump is great. He says he wants peace under Donald Trump's leadership. So that's how quickly things can change. That's exactly what I anticipated and what led to that question yesterday. But here we are. Did we sign that cheque for 100 million? I wonder. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has proposed a partial truce with Russia and said he was ready to pursue a peace deal under the strong leadership of US President Donald Trump. This follows a heated exchange between the two leaders in the White House on Friday and Washington's subsequent pausing of military aid to Kyiv. None of us want an endless war. Ukraine is ready to come to the negotiating table as soon as possible to bring lasting peace closer. My team and I stand ready to work under President Trump's strong leadership to get a peace that lasts, Mr. Zelensky wrote on social media. We are ready to work fast to end the war. And the first stages could be the release of prisoners and truce in the sky, ban on missiles, long-range drones, bombs on energy and other civilian infrastructure, and truce in the sea immediately. If Russia will do the same, then we want to move very fast through all the next stages and to work with the US to agree a strong deal. Now, he had said and was rebuked strongly by Donald Trump that the end of this war was a very, very long way away. And as I say, all of a sudden, Europe was up in arms, literally trying to get up in arms, raise the level of investment in defence as it relates to GDP. This all since Friday. As I say, we committed 100 million. The triple lock conversation was sort of pushed back to the fore because we would been led to believe, and maybe it's still the case, that we were just under threat of something really impending. Will that be rolled back a little bit now that Donald Trump and Vladimir Zelensky are back on the same page? There was no immediate response to Mr. Zelensky's statement from Russia, which earlier welcomed the US suspension of arms supplies to Ukraine amid a rapid warming up of relations between the Ukraine and the White House as Mr. Trump seeks a quick end to Europe's biggest war in 80 years and a rapprochement with Moscow. So it's just that's how quickly things can change. And it's I think it's imperative that countries don't make massive policy changes or massive decisions in terms of funds based on, you know, one exchange in the Oval Office. Now, some will say, oh, well, it was more than that. It was leading up to that. And this is where we were going. But things accelerated very, very quickly since Friday. Right, okay, on to Irish news, and that is Irish news, that's why it's on the front of all the papers. This was a really shocking story that came from Dublin. A young boy is suspected of bringing a large penknife from home to his Dublin primary school before stabbing his 11-year-old classmate. The injured boy had to undergo surgery for serious injuries, including a suspected punctured lung after being stabbed in the back. The incident happened in the Finglas area yesterday morning while the children were on a morning break on the school grounds. School staff were alerted to the incident and immediately contacted emergency services. Gardaí and paramedics responded to the accident and the injured pupil was brought to hospital with serious but non-life-threatening injuries. The boy underwent surgery yesterday afternoon and was receiving treatment in an intensive care unit. We wish him a full and speedy recovery, but I mean, obviously, 11, 12-year-olds taking knives to school, stabbing others in the back. We hope that's a very isolated incident, but I'm sure something that many of you might be concerned about. Micheál Martin speaking in the Irish Daily Mail this morning. He said the majority of people applying for asylum here are economic migrants. This used to be the language of the far right. It's funny how things have changed in the country, isn't it? I mean, this would have been seen as far right rhetoric a number of years ago. And now we have effectively the leader of the country saying that the majority of people applying for asylum here are economic migrants. Micheál Martin yesterday echoed comments made by the Justice Minister at the weekend, who said too many people seeking international protection are not entitled to do so. The new government has vowed to take a tougher stance on immigration amid accommodation shortages and a series of inflamed protests in recent years. The Taoiseach told The Dáil yesterday, "We are a generous people, but I do concur with what the Minister of Justice has said in respect of the majority who do apply. They are economic migrants. And I think the work permit system has proved to be very effective in terms of targeting and creating a lot of opportunities for people in the European Union and beyond to work in Ireland." Now, I could be misspeaking, but that sounds not like something that would have been said quite some time ago. Really quite interesting how things can shift. Just referencing the triple lock, the Irish Daily Star, there have been calls for the government to hold a referendum on proposed changes to the triple lock. What do you think about that idea? Taoiseach Simon Harris received cabinet approval yesterday to change the triple lock and remove UN approval for peacekeeping missions. And I mean, obviously, he's preaching to the converted there. Have we ever had a situation where something has been brought to the cabinet and they've rejected it? I can't remember anything. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I mean, that was a fait accompli. Under the current system, Irish troops can only be sent on missions after getting an okay from the government, the Dáil and the United Nations. Under Minister Harris's proposals, the United Nations approval will be removed. The number of Defence Force personnel that can be deployed as part of an overseas peace support operation without a Dole resolution will increase from 12 to 50. Now, we'll be talking about this, and I'd be interested in finding out people's views and learning a little bit more about this. So at the moment, we decide what we do with our forces. But the UN also has a say. Now, there is the likes of, I think, China and Russia are in the UN, so they can veto something that we wish to do. He wants to get rid of that. Is that not a positive thing, that we still have the dual lock of the Dole, that, in other words, it's an internal decision? Why are some within this country so keen to keep the UN element to that triple lock? Again, I'm speaking from a position of relative ignorance there. I'm not suggesting that's the right or wrong thing to do. An update. I'll get to the that update in a second. Gambling is a big problem. It's one of those issues that when we bring it up in the show, people say, thank God you're talking about this. We talk an awful lot about drink and drugs and other forms of addiction. Gambling is one that is can be as bad, it can be as disruptive, it can ruin families. There's people this week that will go to the bank account and try and take money out for food, and the other half or someone in the house has taken the money and gambled it. It's a big problem. But a new gambling watchdog will officially kick into action in Ireland today. Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan has hailed it as the beginning of a new era for the gambling here. The last government legislation for the creation of Gambling Regulatory Authority of Ireland to license bookies and casinos and help tackle gambling addiction. There's a few very simple things they need to do. They need to get rid of gambling elements in kids' games. I think they're actually doing this in Britain, and I've been on about this for years on this show. FIFA and other games, Fortnite, for an example, all of them have gambling elements whereby you open things and it is like a fruit machine, and you determine whether you've won this, won that, or won the other. All the Call of Duty and Battlefield, they're all the same. You open packs and you can get different weapons or different shields or whatever it might be. So people are being conditioned to gamble from a very, very early age. And then everywhere you go, there's gambling advertising. And your app is pushing, your phone's pushing gambling at you all of the time. It's right across sport. It's absolutely everywhere. Unless that is addressed, we pump millions and millions of taxpayers' money into dogs and horses. Unless that is addressed, there's always going to be a gambling problem. People can still gamble if they wish responsibly, but this active recruitment of gamblers from age dot, that's where they really need to start, in my opinion, which I'm entitled to, by the way, but that is my opinion and not the opinion of anyone else. And the Irish Daily Mirror, Pope Francis stabilised enough yesterday after two respiratory crises to be taken off non-invasive mechanical ventilation, the Vatican said. Officials confirmed the Pontiff, 88, is also receiving high flows of supplemental oxygen via a nasal tube to help him breathe. They revealed Francis woke up and was resuming respiratory physiotherapy after sleeping through the night. The Vatican said, as of yesterday morning, Francis no longer needed to wear the mechanical ventilation mask that covers his nose and mouth to pump oxygen into his lungs. They say he was drifting from rest to prayer, and his situation still is uncertain. But obviously, he is a man of 88. He has suffered respiratory problems in the past. He has 1.5 lungs, effectively, and this seems to be a very stubborn condition that he has. And the, if you read between the lines, the updates on his activity, it seems that he's becoming less active. So you would worry. You would worry in relation to his health moving forward. But they're reserved in predicting the potential recovery or otherwise of Pope Francis. N. Kelly says on X, Greg, we need to talk about cars with bright lights. It's so dangerous late at night. What do you think about that, actually? That is something that is incredibly frustrating. It is the norm now. All modern cars seem to have these massive bright LED lights, and even on dips, they really are quite blinding. If you want to talk about that, yep, more than happy to do so. 086 60 25000. You can give us a call on any matters as well on 07491 25000, or email on comments at highlandradio.com. But please feel free also to comment on our social media, because we're live streaming on the X platform. We are on Highland Radio Ireland on YouTube, where you can watch on your mobile devices. your smart TV or your Fire Stick, and we're all across Facebook as well. We welcome on to the programme Sinn Féin Deputy and Finance Spokesman for the party, Piers Doherty. Good morning, Piers. Thanks for your time.
Good morning.
A couple of things. I would like to start with the situation at Little Angels. There are at least 8 or 9, but I presume you can update that figure because you've been in contact with a lot of parents of children that have been told there are no places for them in this brand new facility. What is the situation in terms of the engagement you've had with parents and of course, raising this issue and raising it in the Dáil too yesterday?
Yeah, thanks, Greg, and thanks for the opportunity to raise this, because this is one of these stories that shouldn't really be a story. And it's a heartbreak for families out there. And I'm very conscious that families with children with additional needs are really battling every day. And it's not fair. It's not right. You know, they have to fight the system for everything from the simplest things, you know, to some of the major issues, the right to education, and that's where we're facing now. So a number of families had been in contact with myself, about 7 or 8, and on Sunday a few of those families came together. There was 8 families in total and present there, and they, all of those 8 families, had received letters from Little Angels saying that they weren't able to enrol their children into the school, despite that the special education officer, that the CNO, basically the person who assesses the needs of the child, has said that they need to go to Little Angels, and they can't enrol them into the school because the school has no capacity. So as the parents were saying themselves, they don't know if there's other parents out there, and these are just kind of people who came together, who kind of knew each other or who reached out through Facebook. I know of other parents who weren't at the meeting, who haven't got the assessment done on their child, but are very clear that the child needs to go to Little Angels. Look, if you're a parent and you've lived through this, you know your child, you have to, might have to wait for the paperwork. And they've been in contact with Little Angels and they've been told, you know, that there is no capacity there. And that's the situation we're in at the minute. And look, we should never be in this situation, Greg. Like, this is ridiculous. You've dealt with this in your programme before. Little Angels, brand new school being built, and already it's too small for the existing number of students that attend that school. There's 23 classes in Little Angels, the old Little Angels school. 3 of them are in Educate Together. Others are in parts of the gym and segregated other rooms and anywhere where you can fit a class in. The new school, the state-of-the-art, so purpose-built new school, only has 20 classes. So there's not enough classes to actually hold the existing students, never mind the 9 or more other children who need to go to that school in September. And that's where we're at.
Yeah, I've heard estimations that there could be up to 36 families affected by this. You referenced the 8 or 9 families. There's a couple of others, I believe, that have that are in other schools and have been advised to apply to Little Angels and for their child. And then, of course, those awaiting assessment. So there's a massive oversubscription here. What is the solution here?
The first thing is let's. It's important that kind of your listeners understand. The state knows the needs of these children. Like, these children haven't developed these needs last night, last week, last month. Since they were born and as they've gone through the system, their needs are clear that they are likely to need a special school, whether it's moderate, severe or profound. And some of them are at the higher level. So it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that we have these type of numbers, and the state should know exactly what kind of numbers we're dealing with. Look, there's two things that need to be done, and they need to really be done immediately. The first is we need to get additional capacity onto the site of the new Little Angel schools that's to open shortly. And the only way we can get additional capacity on that school ground, in my view, between now and September, is through prefabs.
It's really quite remarkable that a new building would be opening with the addition of prefabs. You know, normally prefabs is the short-term solution to an old building as a community fights for years to try and get a new site or an extension or what have you. And we're talking about the best solution at this time for a new facility is to actually locate prefabs on the site. It is quite remarkable, and perhaps it's something that needs a little bit of investigation.
And like, if we park to one side the fact that there's nine families out there at least, and it could be, as you say, up to 34, that don't know where their child is going to school this September, the department already know that there are children in the old school that can't be accommodated in classrooms in the new school. That's why existing rooms that are there for the needs of the children are now have to be repurposed. That's not fair. It's not right. And there seems to be no solution coming forward for the department as to how to fix this. They have no plans for porta cabins or an extension to the school. So what do we need to do? These children can't just land at the school in September and walk in. It's not like other children.
No, equipment needs to be ordered in and everything. Exactly.
But that needs to really start now.
So they need to know where
they're going to be. They need to know what porta cabin. They need to know whether there's auction, whether there's hoist. Do they need to be in place there? And there has to be a whole needs assessment in relation to how that will integrate with the school. So that decision has to be done quickly. And then there will be obviously construction work that has to be done to make sure that there's electricity, that there's water. All of that needs to be done and make sure that it's done throughout the summer, throughout the summer months, to make sure that there is no disruption to the school year. The second thing is we need an extension to that school immediately. So there, like, we can't have children going through their education in porta cabins. We should not accept that we have to get rid of rooms that are in that school that they were to meet the needs of children and use them now as classrooms. That's not fair.
Is there an option? Should we look at, I mean, obviously this is a central location. Should we perhaps look at options of developing a school elsewhere in the county that might actually, you know, meet the needs of capacity, but also make life a bit easier for children and their caregivers?
I think you probably are going to have to meet the need in other parts of the county. But I think because remember that Little Angels will only be able to grow to a certain, you know, to a certain level and so on and so forth. But there is additional capacity required, in my view, in relation to the Letterkenny School in itself. And that's probably the quickest thing that we can do right now. So it is a two-pronged approach, in my view. It is looking at porta cabins being placed, and that they have to be the best and they have to be the most modern to meet the needs of the children, so that they're in place and that we lift the anxiety of the children. And then the second thing is we need the department to start immediately to look at how we actually create permanent capacity on that site. We then also have to look at other needs, which is probably broader than this conversation, but we will be raising some of these issues with the minister in terms of the needs of some of these children who are going to school, who have no respite, and how we can accommodate that. What, if any, purpose we can look at with the old school, which is supposed to transfer to the HSE, should that actually be happening? I think there's a big question mark on that. And also then looking at the geographic profile of people who are attending.
Just to move it on, because there's other stuff I want to talk to you about, if that's okay. But I mean, you know, obviously this can be raised on the floor of the Dáil, and it's important how constructive that is in terms of reaching a solution. I think really what people want to know is, and there seems to be cross-party support, there was cross-party attendance at that meeting on Sunday. Like, is there any commitment for the minister with responsibility to meet public representatives from this part of the world, so that it can be made clear to them that this isn't a political football? There is, unanimous view that this needs to be looked at.
Yeah, because whatever the reasons we're in here, it doesn't really matter at this stage to parents and kids. We just need to get this sorted. So, yes, that's exactly the intention. The intention, and I was eager to ensure that this meeting happens this week, because the Dáil isn't sitting next week because of St. Patrick's Day and many of the ministers are away. So there is a request in now to meet with the Minister, Michael Moynihan. I've been engaging with Pat the Cope, who's actually been in contact with the minister. We haven't got confirmation yet of the meeting, but I would be hoping that it takes place today or tomorrow at the very latest, where we can actually progress some of these. He's sought a report on a number of issues from the NCSE, including the use of the old building in Letterkenny. The one thing, Greg, that it will not be satisfactory to me is that these children would be kind of I use the word, but pawned off to other schools. It's not just a case that they have a right place in September, but they have to have the place that meets
because
their needs.
Every child having a place and every child having the right place are two different things. So we'll all keep a close eye on that. In relation to policing in this part of the world, obviously we hear from the rank and file Gardaí that the situation is dire, but we hear also from the public that they feel there is not proper policing at the moment, and quite concerningly for some, I think two-thirds of new recruits are going to Dublin, and there's 42, 52 maybe it is being spread about the rest of the country. So in other words, it would be very unlikely that the situation in terms of numbers is going to improve greatly in the Northwest this time around. But also too, we've got this model, this operation model that might work very well in an urban environment. I'm not quite sure, but it might work very well. But it's being transferred also to a more rural environment like ours. You've been raising these concerns with the Justice Minister, or you intend to?
Yeah, I raised them yesterday with them. Greg and I asked them to actually come to Donegal as well to meet with the Gardaí to get a sense of the vastness of the county, the fact that we have a huge border that has to be policed, that we have an international airport, that we have a major fishing port, that we have a huge coastal community, and we've seen in the past in terms of drugs and all of that that has to be policed. We have a massive Gaeltacht geographic area as well, which it challenges that, and we have offshore islands that are inhabited, and then we've the vastness of Donegal, which is, you know, which is what we all know and love. So in fairness, he had a positive response back. He was nodding, you know, and seemed enthusiastic in relation to coming up. The new model will not work in Donegal. The idea that you bring the Donegal down to two districts, two community policing districts, without the proper resources simply will not work given the vastness of the county. I'm very clear in relation to that there. I think the Gardaí on the ground are very clear in relation to that. And really, before this kicks in April, the minister has to hear this again. So I will be following up with my request that he comes to this county and hears the issues at first hand. But there's also things that have to be resolved right here, right now. Even if the model did go to a three district model, which is what I've argued for, that we should have a particular district in the west that we capture in that whole Gaeltacht West area, including the islands and the airport in Killybegs. But even if that were to happen, we still have major challenges, as you said, Greg, and I said that to the minister. We cannot have all new recruits going into Dublin. It can't be a case of, you know, the wheel that squeaks the loudest. The fact that we've only got, I think, one new recruit is not acceptable. We've 18 less Gardaí today than we had when Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael came to power. We've a third less of our Gardaí policing our roads. Our roads policing has gone down by a third in the last 3 years. And we don't have a super intendant in Letterkenny since February of last year. And as I said to the minister, I goes, what signal does that send out to rank and file Gardaí who turn up every day to do their jobs, to put themselves in the line of danger, and that we don't even have a super in place 1 year on from the vacancy occurring? And that's not acceptable, and these issues need to be addressed quickly.
All right, the geopolitical situation shifting one way or another. The cabinet signed off on an additional €100 million aid package for Ukraine yesterday. This all seemed to be fast tracked off the back of that meeting between Zelensky and Trump on Friday. They seem to be repairing their relationship now, and yet this check is about to be signed. Are you in favour of this €100 million aid package for Ukraine?
Look, I think in terms of, first of all, money like that should come before the Dáil and should be scrutinised. The detail of it in relation to where it's going and what it's for should be available to committees. But we don't have committees, Greg, set up, as you know, because the government still wants to get Lowry in as an opposition TD, and that's holding up everything. So that's not acceptable in my view. But I think broadly in relation to humanitarian aid, we've always been supportive. Ireland's always done their bit in terms of humanitarian aid to war-torn areas, and also to areas of impoverished areas of famine and elsewhere. And this is probably no different. We need to make sure that it's not about any way assisting the militarisation of what is happening in Ukraine. And there's a broader issue in terms of...
So we have no idea where the money goes.
Well, that's why the committee should be scrutinising this and very, very clear that this money should not be in relation to war efforts. We have parts of Ukraine which is absolutely
destroyed.
But do you
think at this time when we talk of the issues that we're talking of right now, i.e. little angels, etc., and I do know it's not one pot of money where it goes one place and there's none left for it to go to another. I know there is resources there, but in terms of the public perception, when we talk about the issues at Letterkenny University Hospital, Little Angels, and on it goes, that 100 million euro sort of very, very quickly is agreed on by, you know, 12 people and sent out to Ukraine, that the public think, well, what's going on here?
I think that's a fair point from the public's point of view, because they're battling all the time for resources, for supports, and they can't get it. And it's not just in Donegal, but it's elsewhere as well. But money isn't the issue. Like, you know, let's be clear, you know, and everybody can agree with that. Like, the state is bringing in tens of billions of euro of surplus that is not spent every year. You know, it's just been put away. So money is not the issue. In terms of Little Angels, it's a planning issue. Like, the government has failed these kids dramatically.
I understand.
We shouldn't, and I know you're not, but like, we shouldn't put, you know, that up against helping, you know, communities which may be starving
not suggesting that for a second, but I mean, the nightclubs are open in Ukraine, but I'm not in any way having a go.
Yeah.
But you know, that is just the way it is.
That's the point. Yeah. Like, parts of Ukraine are not affected here, and that's why really this needs to be scrutinised. There's been issues in terms of the European Union to make sure that the money is actually going in the direction it's going. I'm more concerned in terms of the direction that Europe's going. Europe announced yesesterday the rearming of Europe, 800 billion euro in the arms industry. And this government, I believe, it wants to be part of that because they're getting rid of neutrality. That was the bigger decision that was taken yesterday in relation to the cabinet. When you have the minister out on Friday talking about buying fighter jets, you know, at the same time when we've got the highest levels of homelessness ever in the state, like, you know, it is absolutely bonkers.
I'm sure those in the Navy, thought that was quite amusing, a suggestion as well, when we can't even staff our ships and we have to pretend they're being serviced when in fact there's no staff for them. I won't keep you more than another minute or two. The triple lock then, are you saying the vote on the triple lock is what was compromising or potentially compromising on neutrality? Is that what you're referencing? Well,
without a doubt. Let's be clear. In fairness, Fine Gael in the past used to be very honest about this here. They argued that we should move beyond neutrality. Indeed, their policy.
But why is it UN? Why is UN oversight a compromise on non-neutrality? Why should the likes of Russia be able to veto a decision?
Russia shouldn't be able to veto. But let's be clear, Fine Gael always wanted to move beyond neutrality. That was the name of their
document. But you talked about yesterday. So just focus on that rather than what you believe the Fine Gael policies are. And I've seen the documents you talk of. I'm not contradicting you. But how does the removal of the triple lock and the UN oversight
That's a fair question. And the reason I make it about their policy is because it's important. They were transparent. They told us what they wanted. And now they're trying to tell us that it's not really that case. It is that case. They want to be able to deploy Irish troops wherever they want without a UN mandate. That is not acceptable to me. It's not acceptable to Sinn Féin. And I believe that it's not acceptable to the Irish people. Why is the UN mandate important? Our peacekeepers have an international reputation which has been developed over generations of being excellent, part of because of the people we have in our defence forces, but also the fact that we are military neutral, that we're non-aligned, and that we only participate in peacekeeping missions that has the mandate of the UN. That is about to end. And that means that the government, Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil or whoever government of the day, can decide themselves to deploy Irish troops to whatever type of activities they want, whether it's peacekeeping or not, whether it's with Europe or not, whether it's a coalition of the willing or not, as has been suggested, whether it was, you know, like literally there would be nothing to stop, for example, hypothetically, Irish troops being deployed if the government wanted to and they had a majority to a war in Iraq in the past. And I strongly believe that is not the role for Irish peacekeeping. That would completely erode Irish neutrality. And I'm very, very clear in this, Greg. If the government really believe that they are right in this here, let the people decide. Put neutrality.
So you're in favour of
a referendum
as well? But the question of neutrality or the question of the triple lock? Because there are those that would argue that the removal of this element of the lock is not impacting on neutrality.
Listen, let's call a spade. Fine Gael want to move beyond neutrality. Fianna Fáil, when they were trying
Many people do.
And that's fine. That's Fine Gael's policy. That's okay. Fianna Fáil, when they were calling out Fine Gael in this year, said that the triple lock is central to Irish neutrality. Now they are dancing to the tune of Fine Gael. The triple lock is absolutely crucial in relation to the issue of
because
Irish
it governs the type of activity.
It has the mandate.
That's
of
all
the
right.
Now
people appreciate we need the clarity.
We need to fix the United Nations so that we don't have big countries actually blocking peacekeeping missions, but to throw out. To basically abandon the United Nations and say we're going on our own, whether it's with the European Union or with another set of countries, is not acceptable in my view. Mm-hmm. And neutrality is something that Irish people cherish.
And my last question, under any circumstances, would you be okay with Irish soldiers in Ukraine post-war?
With a mandate from the UN, it would be considered, but not without a mandate from the UN.
Okay, thanks very much for your time. I do appreciate it. That's Sinn Féin's finance spokesperson, Donegal Deputy Piers Doherty there, 086 60 25 000. That's our WhatsApp and text number. With me on the programme now, Eva McGinley, Ashley McFadden and Sinead Brown. They're all students from PCC Falkara. A very good morning to you all and congratulations. What an amazing achievement to get to the final of Junk Couture, the world final, in fact. It took place in Dublin yesterday. Girls, how are you all?
Good.
I'm good. You're still down in Dublin or back home?
We're still in Dublin.
All right, good stuff. Ashley, and I'll start with you, Ashley McFadden. What's the experience been like?
Oh, it's been amazing. It's been really good. Like this time last year, we were heading to the regional finals that were in Dublin as well. And it's just evolved ever since. So we got to the city finals then in October last year. And then we were at the world finals last night. So it's really, yeah, it's been an amazing experience. We've been at it now for a long time and we wouldn't change it. It was brilliant.
And Sinead, when you progressed, is it with this one design that you progressed throughout the entire competition with?
Yeah, we made it last year and it's been the same dress the whole way through, but we just added pieces to it throughout to make it better.
Yeah, those watching the show will see an image of the dress and we'll post it a little later on our socials as well. What's it made of? Because Junk Couture is about, isn't it, reimagining, reuse. So what is this dress made of?
So the idea is that it's all made to show the beauty in the bogland. So it's all gathered material and gathered waste that was dumped in the bogland. So we had heather on the dress and it was made from plastic bottles and telephone wire. And then the actual dress itself was made from the inside of duvets. And then we had rushes on it as well and Christmas tree and parts of prams and everything.
All right. Okay. Did any bits fall off? That's my concern. Eva, you modelled it. What was it like to wear?
It was tough enough to wear now. I think it got easier as time went on. I got more used to it. So it got more used to me. But it was an amazing experience modelling it, like going out on stage and the crowd roaring for you. And it was just something you'd never really do apart from taking part in Junk Couture. So, yeah, it was amazing.
Brilliant stuff. And Ashleen, it's not just necessarily the items that you used. You've told a story with this work as well.
Yeah, so yeah, that's what we were trying to do as well. Like they encourage that you kind of go against an issue and stuff. And we thought that we'd try and do something that's kind of like connected to Donegal, especially when you're going to like a national stage or even an international stage.
Mm-hmm.
So we... Yeah, so we wanted to kind of underline this issue of people dumping stuff in the bog and then to show off the beauty of the bog as well by making something that kind of highlights the nice colours and the nice like elements that are found there.
Yeah, it is. You can really see. I mean, you could stand in the middle of the bog and that, Eva, and you wouldn't be spotted. but that being said, Eva, you didn't win on the day, but that you've won various competitions or elements of the competition up until now. There's no doubt that that dress could have won on any given day. It's subjective, isn't it? You know,
yeah,
so the judges are going to pick some. But I think you can stand back and look at what he's achieved and say, with a different set of judges or on a different day, we definitely did enough to win the Worlds on this.
That's it. Like, we're so proud of
everything we've achieved. We never thought when we first entered the competition back in the beginning of TY that we'd be here at the World Final. Like, it really is crazy. And we're so happy with how far we've gotten. We've created a brilliant design, and I think all our community has
got behind us
and supported us along the way in the school, and it really was amazing. I know we weren't successful on the World Final, but we are still one of 10 designs to represent Ireland.
Can I correct you here? You were successful. You got to the World Final. You know, this is a massive stage. Being on that stage is a win, but there's only one that can actually win, and as I say, it's subjective. So, to be honest with you, I think you have been hugely, hugely successful. And if you must have neck muscles like a weightlifter now, I don't know how heavy that hat is, but it looks heavy.
It was actually really heavy. I think we used over 300 plastic bottles to create the heather and the dress and a few quilts as well, so my muscles are definitely aching after a long day yesterday.
Sinead Brown, what's been your highlight?
Yesterday, I think, like, getting to meet all the other dresses and just talk to them about their story. We were even speaking French to people as well.
Yeah, like French contestants in the dressing room with us, we were able to.
So glad you paid attention in the French classes a little bit then. So
they were teaching us a bit of Irish.
And Aisling, was it the same with you? Was yesterday the highlight, the culmination of it all?
Yeah, I think it was. I kind of brought everything to a lovely, lovely clothes, and yesterday was lovely, and we had supporters up as well from school, and it was lovely to see them as well when Ava stepped out the stage. They had their flags and their posters and everything with them. So,
brilliant stuff. And we always get a shy teacher, and I'm sure she's floating around the camera there somewhere, Ms. Mairead Harkin. I'm sure. Oh, you're speaking now, Mairead, are you? Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Greg?
I'm doing fine. How proud are you of the girls?
Oh, immensely proud. It's been a long process, but a very valuable one, where they have really evolved during this process, and they have become so confident and speaking online to you here today, and even on TV interviews and radio and going on stage. It's just been fabulous, and they really, really showcased Donegal well last night and showcased their design. And, you know, so many people wanted photos with them yesterday, which was just showing how everyone thought their design was fabulous. So yeah, I'm very, very proud of them.
And Mairead, you've joined an ever-long list now, so I hope you're proud of yourself. Caroline says to me, right, you talk to three girls, but the teacher's not going to be speaking. And I always end up speaking to them anyway, so I don't know why she even says it. That's fine, I understand. I'm sure you look perfectly fine as well. Girls, as a team, you had to really work together. This is like writing a song or making a film or putting on a play, because you know, you have to, your vision has to align, and you all have to sign off on this together. So you obviously work really well together, Eva.
Yeah, so I suppose we all became friends in first year. We were all in the same class. And then in TY, when the opportunity arose to create a design for Jungle Couture, I think we just decided to create a group amongst ourselves. And we all had the same idea and the same, I suppose, initiative, and we knew what we wanted to create. I suppose there was a few arguments and differences.
We'll just not say that. We'll keep it all rosy in the garden.
But I think we're all so happy with how it turned out, and we wouldn't change any of it.
And finally, has this, in any of you, and you're all still very young to be making these type of decisions, but has it maybe reinforced or sparked an interest in fashion design or fashion journalism or anything along those lines for any of the three of you?
Yeah, I suppose it's something we weren't really interested in at the start, but I suppose sustainable fashion is definitely something that's becoming more and more important.
Well, when you're able to create something like that, it would be a terrible shame if that was the last thing that you ever did, if that makes sense. And if it were the last thing, it's a great achievement. But I mean, you know, there are...
Your eyes peeled.
Yeah, I was going to say, there are going to be fashion designers around the world looking at that going, wow, they know what they're doing. So anyway, yeah. Whatever, even if it's for a hobby or a sideline or whatever it is, I'm sure it's not the last thing that you've all worked on. Obviously, Ms. Mairead Hawken, very proud of you. People messaging in and texting in, incredibly proud of you. And we all are as well. You were representing the school, but you represent to all of us. And it was a massive win to represent your school in the county at the Junk Couture World Finals. It's a shame they weren't in Florida. Trust used to get to the final. Trust used to get to the final when they're in Dublin, but they all started here, so I suppose that's not surprising. Thanks very much, girls. Well done to you. You did brilliant.
Thank you, Mairead.
Really appreciate you, setting it up. Much. Take care, Mairead. Three brilliant girls there and a brilliant teacher as well. All from PCC. Was I saying FCC? All from PCC Falkara. They qualified and represented themselves and all of us at the Junk Couture World Final. A beautiful design. It was called Lady of the Landscape, and you could see how it was inspired by the peat bog and our littering of the peat bog, and it drew elements of that in together. But like all of those designs, when they really, really work, it has to be explained to you the materials, because it doesn't look like these are reclaimed stuffs, if that makes sense. Well done, Eva McGinley, who modelled. Ashley McFadden and Sinead Brown, the three of them working as a fantastic team there. Well done all. Rightio, let's see what's next. We don't have time to speak to somebody else, which gives me an opportunity to read some of your comments. It is ridiculous that the state cannot provide prefabs or funding for an extension to the special needs school when modular homes were provided for Ukrainians within weeks of their arrival, and when €100 million was made available for Ukraine yesterday at the drop of the hat. Again, it sometimes suits some people when people that share a land, which we do at the moment, blame each other or seem to blame each other, because we're talking about that I'm reading that message and the focus is more on Ukrainians than it is on the state, if that makes sense. And I'm not sure really if that's not sort of playing into the decision makers' hands and what have you, but it's up to you. That's your view, and I read it out, and I thank you very much. We're going to take a break for the news and obituary notices. Stay with us. Loads, and I mean loads, coming up over the next couple of hours.